Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. And we welcome you into a President's Day edition of Talking.Golf. Rob Hernandez here, Gary D'Amato there. We are between sponsors of Talking.Golf, so if you are interested in jumping aboard and being a sponsor of our weekly podcast, just reach out to Rob Jansen at the WSGA. His email address, rob@wsga.org. Gary D'Amato, your favorite president, Lincoln or Washington?
I'd have to go with Lincoln, I guess. But, you know, President's Day, I'm trying to think of how many presidents played golf and who were, like, the best playing presidents. I know Eisenhower, obviously, was a huge golfer, member at Augusta National, and had a tree named after him there. I know the Bushes played quite a bit. I know, well, Trump plays, but I don't know. He thinks he's the best, for sure. I don't know if he's the best.
Yeah.
Word is he's like a high single-digit handicapper, but that involves quite a few mulligans and pickups and balls move with your toe in the rough, for according to people who played with him. But I don't know. We've had quite a few presidents who have played golf, especially over the last 40 or 50 years.
Well, Gerald Ford was famous for always hitting people with a golf ball,
yeah,
especially at the
right.
Bob Hope Desert Classic.
Right.
It seemed like Bob Hope, Gerald Ford, and then, like a Frank Sinatra type person, it was always, the people who hang out in Palm Springs. Speaking to Dwight Eisenhower, when we've done research on, previously the state AM and now this year the state open up at Minocqua Country Club, he was a frequent visitor of the Minocqua area. I believe he knew Howard Young, who was
really
a Chicago area. I'm not sure where Howard made his millions, but he wound up, donating to the medical center up there, and he was also, I believe, Howard Young, Elizabeth Taylor was his niece, I believe. But Dwight Eisenhower spent a lot of time up in, up there at Minocqua Country Club. I believe there's some photos, either on their website or Facebook page or something. And I was fascinated by that. But, you go back to like some of the, lodges and some of the out of the way golf courses in the North Woods. And, what was it? I can't remember which one was the Al Capone golf course up in, I want to say, Upper Lake Lodge, maybe up in far northwest Wisconsin. But, there's a lot of these, courses that have that great history with, people who would find their way to that area. And it's kind of, come full circle because now everybody who's anybody's up there in the great North Woods, especially at Minocqua Country Club. And, it's just kind of cool to see, how many people have embraced a part of the state that I know I've always enjoyed when I've gone up there, going back to the days when Eagle River Golf Course was really the only thing up there. Timber Ridge was private before Minocqua Country Club went to 18 holes. It's a unique part of the state.
It is. And years and years ago, it was really remote. And I'm sure there weren't many lawmen up there to follow Al Capone around, but obviously now, with tourism and with the explosion of golf and great golf in the northern part of the state, it's become a maven or a haven for golfers from all over. I know a lot of guys who go up north and play every year. St. Germain, Eagle River, Plum Lake, Saner, all those courses up there are very popular.
Yeah, and just always in good shape. And I think the best part about it all, Gary, is it's peaceful up there. And you do feel like you're detached from, I'm guessing, I haven't been up there in a while, but I'm guessing cell signal might not be robust, and that might not be a bad thing.
That might be a very good thing, actually.
Yeah,
you're right.
We don't have enough of those places.
Right.
We've had a lot going on here in the last week here on Wisconsin.Golf, and one of the things I wanted to chat with Gary about was a story last Friday about the new USGA qualifying rules for their amateur championships, in which the state amateur champion, in many cases, both at the men's, women's, and the junior boys, junior girls level, will receive exemptions into their corresponding USGA championships. For Wisconsin, Gary, it really applies this year to one tournament in particular, the State Am, the state junior, because of when it's situated in the Wisconsin calendar, the winners of those, if they're eligible in 25, would get the exemption. And the women's state am, because they went to 36 holes for a couple years, about 3 years ago, they need a three-year,
track record.
Yeah, data to be able to make sure their field is strong enough to warrant the exemption. Let's start first with the men's amateur. I think it's a great idea. And, can you know, I mean, you look back last year, Jack Schultz, who has qualified for many of these championships, now a mid-amateur in addition to being an amateur, I think it would, he would have acquitted himself well. It does seem like the state amateur champion translates well to USGA championships.
Yeah, it does, Rob. And Rob Jensen raised a great point. Sometimes you have a state amateur champion who does not get through, the local qualifier to go to a national championship. And that's a shame, because when you have your best player in the state just doesn't have his best golf on one day, he doesn't get to go to the national championship, U.S. amateur. And now he will. So I think that's a great change. There's a lot to play for, obviously. To call yourself a state amateur champion is paramount, but to get that exemption into the U.S. amateurs is huge. It's just like another big carrot dangling. Maybe a little more pressure on the guys coming down that final stretch of holes, too, who are in contention. I'm sure they'll be thinking about that.
Well, it's worked famously at the junior level with the Wisconsin PGA section. They have two junior championships now, or tournaments that feed into the national. And for those kids, it's huge because it gives them exposure at the national level. Sometimes they aren't able to, necessarily, qualify or get through for the U.S. Boys and Girls Junior. But if you win the Wisconsin PGA Junior at what has been Dretzka and Brown Deer Park this year, they're going to Oakwood and Brown Deer Park. And then because of where it's situated in the schedule, the 36-hole players event at Black Wolf Run is typically the second qualifier. Actually, it's the first qualifier. And so anyone who qualifies there, then they, whoever is next in line out of the junior championship goes. So I think it strengthens some of those fields as well. And I think that's what they're hoping for, Gary, eventually with the women's amateur, because, they've done a wonderful job since the WSGA took it over of building the quality and the quantity of the competitors, and kind of, going away from the flight concept to really focus on making sure championship flight is a true championship. And now with the 36-hole opener and the 18-hole finale, it fits the criteria, and it should entice, a lot of the college golfers to try to give it a shot. But as you look back again at the men's amateur, in addition to the champion going, there is also a carrot for the top three finishers after that, I believe, and because they've also changed the U.S. Am qualifying from being a 36-hole grind on one day in the middle of the summer to an 18-hole local into an 18-hole sectional, somewhat like the U.S. Open qualifying that we see to start the year.
Yeah, that's another big change. You're right, Rob. Two-stage qualifying off for the U.S. Amateur. And those top three finishers in the state am are exempt the next year, or that year, actually. No, the next year. They're exempt, I believe, the next year from the local qualifier. So they go right to the final 18-hole qualifier. That's big, too. You finish second or third in the state am, you're disappointed that you didn't win. But, hey, you've got a nice little perk for playing so well and for, coming close in a state amateur, and that you get to skip a stage of U.S. amateur qualifying the next year. So that's huge, too.
I don't know what your feeling was on 36-hole qualifiers, especially for the AM. I mean, I think the only one that really needs to be a 36-holer is the U.S. Open sectional qualifying, or now the final qualifying, because it makes for a great day of golf. If you have a bad morning round, you can rally in the afternoon. In some cases where they assign the final qualifying, they're at two sites, so you need to play 36 holes to accommodate the number of golfers, especially, I believe, the one that's usually right after the Memorial in Ohio. What are your thoughts on 30? It felt, when I went out to see you at the 36-hole qualifier at Hidden Glen last year, it first of all, it was a hot day, and it just seemed like it was everybody that walked by us looked beaten. I mean, just physically beaten, and it was, only in the middle of the day.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask for, 36 holes in one day, especially in a, Hidden Glen played pretty tough and the greens were extremely quick. They're always very fast there. And you're right. I think, some guys get worn down. I like the concept of going to two separate 18-hole qualifiers to get into the U.S. Amateur. I think it's a good move. And although it does require, you know, guys to go through two stages and to this year, for instance, guys who will have to travel a little bit because, we've always had a final U.S. Amateur qualifier in Wisconsin. And now we're going to rotate probably with, the CDGA, Chicago District Golf Association. Rob Jansen was telling me. So it'll be every other year we'll have one of those final qualifiers in Wisconsin, and the other odd number of years, you'll be going probably down to Chicago or somewhere else if you can't get into Chicago. So in that regard, it does ask a little bit more of qualifiers that they have to go to two different spots and maybe travel to one.
I don't have a problem with that because I've seen a lot of Wisconsin golfers in the fields in the CGGA qualifiers. So they're used to that. I've also seen our Western Wisconsin golfers, over in the Minnesota Golf Association qualifiers for the USGA events. So I think the golfers are comfortable with that. And I think with the carrot and really the Wisconsin State Amateur, I would think mentally becomes your major qualifier. You almost use the other one as your fallback, your plan B. If you're a Jack Schultz or a Cameron Huss or a Jacob Beckman, some of the guys that are amateurs now that are, and they may not even be around, to play amateur golf here by the time, this year's State Am at Merrill Hills, they may, this is their last year of eligibility for some of these guys. They may, be already, turning professional. Pearson Hunt, another one. But I think, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how the true qualifying process is treated by our top golfers versus, trying to go after it through the State Amateur.
Yeah, and the other thing is, Rob, this year the U.S. Amateurs at Hazeltine National in Chaska, Minnesota, just over the border. So, I mean, if we get a couple, two, three guys get in this U.S. Am, it might be worth our while to one of us to probably me to swing over there and do something on the U.S. Am.
Yeah, no, definitely you. Although I've been getting pressure. I've been getting pressure. My daughter lives. They bought a house, and it's like in a community in a. What do you call it? An area, a subdivision, right next to Chaska Town Course, which will be the second qualifier. And so you've got a place to stay up there, Gary. I'm sure I can pull some strings. But she asked if I was coming up, and I didn't even know that it was this year at Hazeltine, for the main part of the championship. But that's great. Hazeltine's hosted, PGAs and U.S. Opens. I love it when they, and Chaska Town Course is one of the great public courses in Minnesota. And, I think that's pretty cool. It's a great year for this to start. And I would hope that, we'll feel – it'll give us something to follow at the State Am at Merrill Hills in addition to, who's going to be the winner of that competition like we do every year. It's just – again, these are fun. It's like on the PGA Tour. Everything you do is geared towards, designated events, getting in the majors, getting your status for next year. It's what golf is all about.
Yeah, it's great having that extra carrot, so to speak. I remember covering the 2011 U.S. Amateur at Erin Hills and Kelly Kraft, the winner who beat Patrick Cantlay that day. I think it was Jim Holtgreave who was then the captain of the U.S. Walker Cup team, and he walked up to not long after Kelly Kraft sank that winning putt, he walked up to him and shook his hand and said, "Welcome to the Walker Cup team." So it's great to have those extra carrots dangling in front of you in these big events.
Yeah, it sure is. And then going back to the juniors for just a second, Gary, Wisconsin has not done anything to try to shift the schedule. Now, one of the concerns is, with all these, qualifying things dangling out there with your amateur championships in state, do you move those to the front end of your state schedule so that the kids and the amateurs can play in the national championships at the back end? Now, Minnesota did that, Gary, and moved their junior championships to the last weekend of June. And what that did, it displaced the Wisconsin-Minnesota Junior Cup matches, which are very popular on both sides, but they're popular and they're successful because both sides of the river bring their best players. Well, now, if you were to be stubbornly keep the cup matches, opposite the, your junior amateurs in Minnesota, you're not going to that event loses something. So that one shifts now to early July and to accommodate Minnesota. It just, you know, there's a lot of arm wrestling for dates on the junior schedule. We're coming out of the boys season, you know, the first or even second week sometimes of June. There aren't a lot of dates in June, Gary, to run junior championships. And you want your kids fresh to be able to play in those championships, you know, in state, identify the best champion, you know, because that's what we've always done. I don't know where this fits and how you, you know, wedge all these in so that these championships can be played in, you know, or these berths and these exemptions to the U.S. championships can be used in the same calendar year that you win them.
That's a really good point, Rob, because the other part of that is that the winners of the junior boys and girls in our state, if they have to wait a year, they might age out of the, you know, a lot of the winners of those championships are toward the top edge of the age limit in our state. So if they have to wait a year, you know, they're going to be too old to play in the U.S. boys and girls juniors. So I think Rob and the WSGA and the WPGA are probably going to look at that, and probably I would assume that they're going to at least try to look at moving those dates earlier in the year for those championships.
You would think. And then, you know, of course, there's also the domino effect. A lot of those kids are playing in adult events, and we've got the Women's State Open and the Women's Amateur Match Play early in the season on the women's schedule, and we've got the Ray Fisher and the men's state match play, among others. Some kids even, you know, might choose to play in the best ball if their high school seasons are done. But so that it's not just junior events that they're up against. The Dells Junior Championship is usually the week after the WPGA Junior. So there aren't a lot of places to put it without diminishing other events. I think it really becomes, you know, how much can we fit into June, and what in June can be played comfortably and on good courses in July and August as the height of the golf season in Wisconsin gets in the full swing. And it's really hard sometimes to get courses, especially for the junior championships. So I hope everyone has an open mind on that, because I think, you know, ultimately what the USGA has done here is a great, great opportunity for all golfers at the highest level in our state. And I'm looking forward to seeing a lot more Wisconsin flavor, especially in the Women's Amateur Championship and the juniors.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. The calendar does pose a problem. June, when I look at June, and we're talking about in a week or so getting together and figuring out our summer schedule, that month of June is just nonstop tournament golf, both at the junior level and the adult level. I mean, there's so much going on in June and July and August, but June is rough to move. It's tough to move things later in the summer, you know, 8 weeks earlier in the summer. It's just tough to do.
Well, and you're a guy who's been to many U.S. Opens, and it does seem like Father's Day weekend, you know, right around there, it's void of any competition. I mean, everybody's glued to the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
And there's really nothing that's that you're scheduling in hopes that maybe somebody from your state will play in it. And so you're not going to put anything major on those dates. And it just speaks to the great job that the staff at the WSGA, the Wisconsin PGA do, and now having them in the same offices, you know, as opposed to years ago when they were in separate buildings. You know, they're able to work together on this a little bit and you know, try to look out for each other's best interests and ultimately the people scheduling their summers. I know our friend JT Johnson up in Minnesota. Can you imagine this? You've got opportunities to get into national championships through your amateur events in Minnesota and, you know, being a border guy and Wisconsin, you got to figure out which is the best course for me to do that, which is the best, you know, fields for me to do that. Yeah, it's enough to make your head spin. I'm glad we're just lousy enough golfers, Gary, where this isn't a factor.
Yeah, it's definitely not a factor for me. And you're right, though. JT, some of those guys who live in other states and come play in Wisconsin can sort of double dip and cherry pick their schedule, which is nothing wrong with that. Hey, whatever's going to make you the most competitive and wherever you feel you have the best advantage and the best chance to move on, that's where I'd play too if I were them.
Well, and speaking of potential double dippers, we've got another one back in the mix. Sweet spot today, Neil Johnson, the 2005 WSGA Player of the Year, a longtime mini tour golfer, and the winner of the 2016 Colorado Open, the 2017 Nebraska Open. He on Valentine's Day last week regained amateur standing after more than 15 years of chasing a career in professional golf. He's now a financial advisor at a company down here in the Scottsdale area, and he plans to play in a number of Arizona Golf Association events. He got engaged in 21, Got married in 22. His wife that he became a stepfather to her two daughters. And then also then they had a son last year. And then he started a new career. There hasn't been a lot of time for golf for Neil Johnson, but I'm really eager to see what he does here, Gary, because we've got a number of guys who are trying the mini tour route who are more than welcome to come back. We've seen this, you know, Jim Lemon, Garrett Jones, a lot of these guys have come back and played really, really well in the amateur ranks and made those tournaments better. It'd be great to see Neil Johnson come back. Unfortunately, he never won a state am, so he doesn't have a lifetime exemption, but I think he can be a big factor in amateur golf.
Oh, no question about it, Robbie. You know, I don't know Neil as well as you do. I covered him in a couple state ams and maybe a state opener 2 years ago, but great admiration for what he's been able to do to cobble together a career on the mini tours, which you know, and a lot of our listeners know, is very, very difficult to do. Most guys, you know, beat their heads against the wall for 3 or 4 years on the mini tours, run out of money and go get a real job, so to speak. But Neil made a career of it, basically. And a couple of those big victories that put some money in his pocket in Colorado and Nebraska certainly helped, but happy for him. And be interesting to see what he does as a reinstated amateur now.
He texted me a comment about all this. He says, I'm excited to play some competitive tourneys, but not pay $1,000 and grind for $1,500. That is the essence of the Monday qualifier, the mini tour golfer, the golfer hitting, you know, seeking to hit the lottery. Now, you know, even the Korn Ferry Tour golfers, the PGA Tour America golfers, because of the new PGA Tour hierarchy structure, you aren't guaranteed anything. In fact, you know, every week they're tweeting out, you know, who got in and who didn't from the Q School graduates. And I'm, you know, it's a different world out there, and you really, really have to be good and catch lightning in a bottle to find a way to get out there on a permanent basis.
Yeah, I mean, if you can make it work on the mini tours for 3 or 4 years and stay financially solvent, you're way ahead of the curve. And for him to have done it for the better part of 2 decades it's quite a story.
Yeah, and after a while, Gary, the Dan Woltman tour of the Nebraska Open, the Iowa Open, the Des Moines Open, a few Dakotas tour events, it gets kind of old. But, you know, if you win them, you get you get some decent money. I'm not going to say a lot of money, but it'll be interesting to see where Neil goes with that. This week, Gary, it's the middle of the golf show season. We had a couple weeks ago, West Michigan, Minnesota, Appleton. This week, the Chicago Golf Show down at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. We've been there in the past when we had Golf Time Midwest magazine. We don't anymore. We won't be there. But my heart, Gary, will be in Rosemont because it was always a fun time. Normally it's a time when there's snow on the ground and you've got nothing else to do but go to a golf show. Certainly not the case this winter.
Yeah, for sure, Rob. A lot of people will be playing golf, it looks like. Although the weekend's supposed to be a little colder, which probably will help them. But, you know, outside of Orlando, the big PGA merchandise show, and I really don't know what goes on the East Coast. I'm sure there's some big shows, you know, in some of those metro markets. But the Chicago show is really big. You know, 300 exhibitors. That Donald E. Stevens Convention Center is huge. As you know, Rob, we've walked that floor many times. And there's a lot going on in this show, and I know we have listeners and readers in Wisconsin who go down to that show. So wish I could be there this weekend. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday show. You remember, we've been there many times when that show floor is just packed with people around. You can hardly move in those aisles.
Yeah, the bagpipes are playing, and they've got, you know, people speaking on a main stage. This year, Wisconsin well represented. Sand Valley, Lake Arrowhead will have a booth. Century World will again have a booth. The Bullet Pinehurst Farms, a number of courses from the Lake Geneva area, including Hawks View and Evergreen down in Elkhorn. Eagle Ridge Resort and Spa will have a booth. Reesburg Country Club, Northern Bay Golf Resort, Green Lake will have a presence down there. And then, you know, you get, you know, Wisconsin, you get, you know, the Illinois courses, especially the resort courses. And then you get a number of areas. I'm not sure if Alabama is going to be there this year. They've been there in the past, you know, 1 year. Alabama will be there. Florida usually has a presence, the Florida Golf Alliance, the Minnesota Golf Alliance will be there. So you really get an opportunity to explore, you know, where you might want to go, play your summer golf, do your buddy trips, that kind of thing. There's just no shortage of information down there. And, you know, and you can even hit equipment. That's where I'd always stock up on, you know, on golf balls for the summer. And occasionally, because I was traveling usually with a suitcase, I could never buy clubs, which is probably good for my relationship with my wife here at home. But I would come back with, you know, golf balls, tees, you know, some of the things that you might, you know, be able to, you know, fit into a golf bag. There was always the latest stuff. I remember those little stickers you could put on to mark your golf balls. That was always cool. So, you know, I'm just looking here at the, you know, at other, you know, and sometimes you get, you know, some of the, you know, some of the latest and greatest inventions. You know, Putter RX is one that jumps out at me. Swing Lube, Gary, I'd have to Google to see what Swing Lube is. Have you read about Swing Lube?
I have not, but I'm guessing there's probably some alcohol content in Swing Lube.
I would either that or, you know, for those of us 55 plus, yeah, I think you're right. Never mind. It's not loosen the muscles. It is no pain, all game. Well, let me see. It is my dad's first global pain relief for golfers. Soothing pain relief to get you through 18 holes. It is, oh, a concentrate of 11 plant-based essential oils.
Oh, okay.
And chosen as one of the top 10 new products in the Michigan Golfer magazine back in 2015. So I guess it's been around a while. I just, you know, my wife asked me today, why don't you ever stretch when we wake up in the morning? I go, it's a gradual thing for me. By noon, yeah. I'm all stretched out. So that's why I don't do it. But, yeah.
Well, about, I think, 3 years ago at the show, Rob, they had one of the equipment people had a big sale on gloves. And so I bought a bunch of gloves. And our readers can't, or our listeners can't see, but I'm holding up all the gloves that I still have from that show, Rob. I think I've got 7 still new golf gloves from that show 3 years ago. I've got golf gloves to last me at least 3 more years, Rob.
I love it. And that's what I would do too. I did come back. And in fact, and I go through them quite, you know, my hand tends to sweat quite a bit, you know, whether I was in Wisconsin with the humidity of the summer or Arizona now with the hot weather. I go through them even in the wintertime. And, and I was lucky, at our pro shop, they had a little, treasure chest full of older golf gloves, brand new golf gloves, but, you know, still in their packaging, but, you know, last year's model for $5 each. And that was as close to Chicago Golf Show prices as I've come. I miss it. It was always like, you know, sometimes you get, you know, 3 for $10, you know, they weren't great. Yeah. You know, they weren't top of the line, you know, foot joys, but they were good.
Yeah. Yeah. They work. Yeah. I don't think these are top of the line, but you know, a couple of, you know, I play probably 40 to 50 rounds of golf a year, Rob, and some of these gloves now last the entire year for me, or nearly so. And it used to be when I was a kid, you know, you'd get those cheap golf gloves and they'd rip at the palm. And, you know, I'd go through golf gloves like crazy, but they must make them better today or out of better synthetic materials because they definitely last longer.
Yeah, I'm not seeing as many holes in the fingertips either. So, I mean, just like the golf ball, just like the golf tee. And now I'm starting to accumulate a lot of, like, I've got a whole, you know, shoebox full of golf tees. I played with a friend of mine who was a member at the Legends clubs down there in the Waukesha, Milwaukee area. And, you know, they have a lot of tees you know, at the first tee and the 10th tee. And I know this because a number of them are now in my golf bag.
It's funny because, you know, you can grab handful of tees at so many places you play at. And I just remember coming up in golf, tees were like gold. You had to buy them. And, you know, you picked them out of the ground when you found good ones. But now, tees are a dime a dozen or cheaper. And, you know, it's funny, Rob, I have a little golf rummage sale every year. And I had so many tees last year that I had a big box of tees. And I put lifetime supply of tees, $10, and someone bought them. That's probably 500 tees in there.
Now, I've got to ask you, though. I've been playing with a lot of people who are starting to use tees that have that look different. Some of them have the you know, they find the height that they like, and then they have a stop where, you know, you push it in the ground and it stops at that point, you know, the way it's made. and they swear by it. They also, other people have these things that you're now, it's a string that you put the tea through, and then it's got like a little object. It could be a, you know, it could be a Cupid doll. It could be a clown. It could be whatever, so that you can find the tee after you've hit the ball. I find that a little extreme.
Yeah. I don't see Tiger Woods or Steve Stricker using that kind of tee on the golf course, Rob. More power to people who want that or need it. But yeah, that's, I'm a little too much of a traditionalist to go with something like that, I would say.
My Legends tees from my experience last year at Merrill Hills and at Bristlecone, they have, you know, they're almost, they have like, you know, they're almost like a crown. You know, the old tees were, you know, kind of, they sit on the wood base and, or the wood top. And, I'm not sure aerodynamically if it's changed anything, but, you know, the tee shot hasn't been a problem lately. I'm not sure if the tee has anything to do with that.
Yeah. You know, some of those companies claim that those tees with the little three prongs that the ball sits on, and there's a little air underneath that reduces friction and gives you two or three more yards. How can you measure that? How can you say a tee can give you two more yards? I mean, but it's a good marketing gimmick, and, you know, hey, maybe it does work. Who knows? Psychological.
Absolutely. So Chicago Golf Show starts Friday down at Rosemont, the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center. You can go to chicagogolfshow.com for more information. We should mention, too, that the Stricker family was playing a lot of golf last weekend. And Bobby and Izzy managed to avoid the rain that plagued Dad over the weekend. Bobby finishing fifth at the NXXT Tour event in Sorrento, Florida. And Izzy finished, what did she finish here? Was it
21st, I think?
21st, yes. And and then neither one in the field this week at their event in Florida. That may not get played. A lot of rain over the weekend, and it reduced the Chubb Classic from 54 to 36 holes. They were almost going to play 9 holes yesterday, Gary, on holes 1 through 4 and 15 through 18, which would have been a creative way to get more holes in. I think it was a ploy to try to get Rocco Mediate, the runaway first-round leader, a victory, but instead Stephen Ames wins, and I believe it's his fifth win since January of last year, second only to Steve Stricker and just ahead of Stephen Elker on the PGA Tour champions. But Jerry Kelly, a T10, and Mario Tiziani, a T35. Boy, a lot of rain down in Florida. I'm glad I'm in Arizona. I'm glad Mike Davis is in Arizona. Florida, not a good weekend to be down in the, what is that, the Sunshine State?
Supposed to be. Are you, are you guys going to get hit with some of that rain that's nailing California right now? I know LA and Malibu and Point South Long Beach are just getting pummeled and hammered by rain. But that often skirts you guys, doesn't it? In the desert, it there, it goes north.
Yeah, we got some a few weeks ago, but my long range forecast shows that we're because we've got friends from Minnesota coming in this weekend, and I've got a Friday tee time, and thank goodness 78 for a high, 53 for a low. That's what you hope the Minnesota people do, because then ultimately they leave Minnesota and they come down here, and and of course, you know, Gary, last week pitchers and catchers reported, and the first spring training games are Thursday.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Excited to see what the Brewers do, Rob. I mean, they've lost some really good players, but Jackson Chourio, the probably going to be their everyday center fielder, the young kid who's got speed and power and has destroyed the minor leagues. I'm anxious to see what he does. I wonder how many of those guys, you think a lot of those guys bring their golf clubs? Do they have time to play during spring training? I have no idea.
That's a good question. You know, and we were at the Mariners ballpark on Saturday night. The Savannah Bananas had a three-game series up there, the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. And, you know, it's hard not to pass a golf course. They're all over the place. Although Maryvale, I don't think the concentration, it's not the best neighborhood of Phoenix.
But, right.
So, you know, and of course, all the courses you want to play are up in Scottsdale anyway. So, yeah. I would think that they've got some time, but I don't know. That's a good question. I've always wanted to, you know, check the rosters to see, you know, who might be in the gin handicap system and what they play to. But, you know, just like the presidents, Gary, the baseball players, some of them have been very good. Robin Yount was a great golfer. Gorman Thompson was a great golfer.
Yeah, a lot of them really good golfers. Ted Williams, I understand, was a really good golfer. I'm sure, you know, the golf swing is similar, at least, to a baseball swing. There's big differences. Of course, the plane and you're hitting, you know, the you know, in a baseball swing is obviously more horizontal, but a lot of those guys have so much power. I'd like to see Mike Trout and guys like that hit a golf ball. I bet they just kill it.
No, Gary, that brings to mind that there might be an opportunity for these guys to play because there are a number of executive and par three courses in the area, including Peoria Pines, which is either a Packer or Badger bar during the football season. That's just a little bit north and west of State Farm Stadium. And you know, I would think they might have time to, you know, sneak in some maybe short course golfing. And speaking of that, you had another story last week. They unveiled the plans for a new par three course at the club at Lac La Belle. And as you mentioned in the story, it is a trend. Almost every, you know, destination golf course now seems to have a short course, a par three course, you know, Trapper's Turn with Andy North's 13-hole creation, the Bass, the Black Wolf Run. The sandbox. I mean, it really is a cool. Would you call it an amenity for some of these places?
I guess you would, Rob. Yeah, it's especially for a place like Lac La Belle, which is, you know, there's a lot of great golf around that area, but Lac La Belle sort of stands above the rest from public golf as a destination golf course. And then if you want to play more golf, if you're a touring golfer who comes in with a bunch of buddies and are on one of those trips. Really, you play Lac La Belle, and then you move on to the next course. Well, this is a great way to keep them at the course for another half day at least. You play golf in the morning, you have lunch, and then you say to your buddies, hey, let's go out and play the short course and have some fun. Have a drink and, you know, bat it around the short course. And these amenities or these short courses, whatever you want to call them, have been hugely popular at these destination resorts. And I think Lac La Belle needed that, and this is going to be a welcome addition. It's going to be done by Craig Haltom. Who's been, you know, really, really good for the state of Wisconsin golf courses. He's done work at Lithonia, at Beloit Club, at Stevens Point Country Club, which we played last year, Rob. So Craig's going to do a great job with the short course, and I'm sure it's going to be fun to play.
And, I know in our coverage for the Wisconsin.golf yearbook, you know, the club at Lac La Belle is getting more and more involved in tournament golf in the state of Wisconsin. They will be playing host to the first big men's amateur event of the calendar year here in 2024, the WSGA Four Ball Championship, May 29th through June 1st. You can register now on the WSGA website, and that'll be a fun course for a four ball championship.
Yeah, there's as you said at the start of this spot, you know, there's a reason that these courses are adding these short courses and par three courses. And it's to keep golfers there a little longer. It's a low stress, fun round of golf. As Craig Haltom said in the story I wrote on Lac La Belle, he said, you know, you can get really crazy and wild with the green contours and the bunkers and make them really a lot of fun because, golfers, when they're playing a short course with their buddies, they're not really keeping score. If they make a double or triple bogey, they're not nearly as upset as they would be if they did it on a big course when a score counts and they're probably playing for a little money with their buddies. But on a short course like that, you can get away with a lot more around the greens. And those greens at 12 North, Rob, at Trapper's Turn are tremendous greens. I mean, they could be almost any one of those greens could be a U.S. Open type green, really.
Wow, that is pretty cool. And we saw two years ago at the State Am at Sand Valley, to your point about keeping golfers on the property. Once the competitors in the championship were done with their rounds, many were seen at the sandbox, you know, just playing and having fun on the par three course. And as you say, it's not like other par three courses. It's not like other par three holes you might play. And there's a reason they have one of the championships up there each year. The sandbox is every bit as good with its yardage as the championship courses that have defined Sand Valley.
Yeah, absolutely. Because during that par three championship, they can really tuck the pins in some really, really difficult spots. And typically a score around even par wins on that par three tournament that they have. It's hard to get under par on some of those holes because of where they stick the flag sticks. But then again, they can put them in the middle of the greens. And then it's just, you know, wedges and eight irons in the greens. And it's a lot of fun playing, of course, that way, too.
We've got a few things to look forward to here this week as we wrap up our Talking Dot Golf for President's Day. Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly off this week. I should also mention, if you haven't read Gary's story on Steve Stricker being inducted into the Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame, it's quite an eclectic group that he's going to be going in with. Former Brewer Prince Fielder, former Packer coach Mike Holmgren, and given that the Daytona 500 is now being scheduled for Monday afternoon, as just hours after we record the podcast, Matt Kenseth of Cambridge going in along with Stricker. That's pretty cool. Gary, obviously well-deserved for Steve Stricker. Not many golfers in that Hall of Fame.
No, there are only he's joining three other golfers, E.P., Ned Alice, who won the state amateur 10 times way back, you know, 80, 90 years ago, was Ned Alice's heyday. And then more recently, Andy North and Sherry Steinhauer. And then, you know, Herb Kohler's in the Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame, more obviously for what he built in golf than as a player. And the only other person with real golf ties is Billy 60, who is a longtime Milwaukee Journal sports writer. By the way, an excellent golfer who I think qualified for or played in 20 state AMs. And I think he reached the finals a couple times, but if not for his pedigree as a sports writer and as an excellent bowler too, he probably wouldn't be in the hall. He wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame just based on his golf ability. So Steve's really joining three other golfers in the Hall of Fame. And I got to say, Rob, it took some twisting of his arm to get him to agree to go in the Hall of Fame. They've been trying to get him in the hall for a couple of years, and they finally were successful. And 10 days before that, he goes into the Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame on April 20th, downtown at the Marcus Performing Arts Center. 10 days before that, I think the Golf Writers Association of America has twisted his arm that he'll be in Augusta to accept his Player of the Year award from the GWAA at our annual dinner. So two of these things in 10 days, Rob, that's a lot to ask of Mr. Stricker, but it looks like he'll be at both.
So, in other words, when you and I get together for the AmFam Championship in June, he may not want to even talk to you by that point.
Yeah, he'll be talked out for sure.
I thought of you this weekend when Jim Nance basically tried to strong-arm the Golf Writers Association of America into giving the next Comeback Player of the Year award to Gary Woodland. And then, of course, you know, by the end of the weekend, Will Zalatoris, who is coming back in his own way, almost won the tournament. So, now, I don't know what Jim Nance would say on that one, but Jim Nance would like to cast a vote for Gary Woodland for the next Comeback Player of the Year. Have you announced who this year's is?
We are. You know what? I can spill it right now because that announcement is just ready to go out, and it is Gary Woodland win our Comeback Player of the Year award.
Thank goodness. Jim Nance can rest easy. Breaking news here on Talking.Golf. Wow. Yeah, that is
good. Our listeners, just don't tell people where you heard that, because I don't think I'm supposed to spill that news quite yet. But yeah, it's going out any day now that he was named our Comeback Player of the Year.
We call it
the Ben Hogan Award, which Steve Stricker won last year, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. So that is pretty cool. It'll be a great night down at Augusta, and then when Steve goes into the Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame. As we look at the calendar this week, I know I've got a lot of college golfers coming to town. Friday it's the, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the Rio Verde Invitational hosted by Western Michigan. I know that Rachel Coughlin's in the field because Jason Coughlin, her dad, reached out and asked if I was going to be there. I managed to get up for a day last year, but this year it overlaps with visits from friends. So Sunday morning, I may get up there if we've got some people in the hunt. I believe Rachel Coughlin will be there. Jenna Anderson, who's now at is it Utah Tech, used to be at UW Green Bay out of Kettle Moraine. Loyola will be there with Brandi Johnston, but I don't know who's in her lineup. And then at this point, I think that Mallory Schwartz, who out of Franklin, who's at Bowling Green, she was actually here this last week over at Wigwam. And had a tough couple of first and second round, but then rallied in the final round. And of course, as you know, it's tough to get into the flow when you're coming from the Midwest and just starting out the competitive season. The Badger women will host their Westbrook Invitational tournament down here on Sunday and Monday. And then Ty Kretz, Max Schmidtke, and Parker Etzel among the confirmed golfers, it appears to be in the Loyola Maryland Intercollegiate being played here in Arizona. How a school from Maryland is going to host. Of course, Western Michigan's hosting at Rio Verde. Everyone comes down to the Valley. We've got the Mike Davis Invitational. We found out on our call. His buddy Kripa is this week too. Everybody's coming to the Valley. That's why it's $550 to play the TPC Scottsdale.
That's right. It's hey, better to play in Scottsdale and Phoenix area than try to get some of those tournaments in where the weather isn't quite as nice, Rob, in the Midwest and the Northeast. So it's cool that the Badgers will be down there, and we'll have some good early season competition and figure out who's in the lineups for the Badgers, especially.
Absolutely, and then Mario Tiziani will be the only Wisconsin golfer in this week's PGA Tour Champions event. Why? It's in the Middle East. It's the Trophy Hassan II, and with our friend Stephen Ames, the defending champion. So Mario will try to prevent Stephen Ames from inching closer to Steve Stricker for the most PGA Tour Champions victories since January of 23. It's really become, as I put on Twitter, the Senior Tour, STE, between Stricker, Ames, and Elker. If you're not, if your first name doesn't start with an STE or be a variation of Steve, you know, you're just not any good anymore on the PGA Tour Championship.
Yeah. And, I guess it's no surprise that Mr. Stricker isn't going. It's tough enough to get him on an airplane to go down, to your neck of the woods, Rob. So he's not going to Morocco. That's for sure.
Well, the Open Championship, that would have been if he had won at Stevens Point at Century World last year, yeah. It would have been in possession of all four senior majors. Would he have gone after the fifth across the pond? Someone did ask him that question, and he kind of politely said, yeah, I do intend to get back there someday. I think it would have to be a senior Open Championship at St. Andrews. I can't imagine anywhere else that he would go.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was even money had he won that U.S. Senior Open. I think it was even money whether he'd even go over there and try to sweep the majors, which is saying something, but he's not, he's in a point in his career, Rob, where more power to him. He can pick and choose where he wants to play, where he likes to play, doesn't really like to go overseas. Can't blame him for that. Travel's a hassle, especially these days. So, more power to him that he sticks to what he wants to do and what he does best.
Well, we will follow all that this week, and just kind of exciting that the season is getting underway. It won't be long now. I keep looking, Gary. Registration must not have started for the USGA events because there's still nobody in the player portal area on the WSGA site for the US Open local qualifying. At least they haven't added anybody. I guess maybe. I'm guessing you should be able to sign up by now. Actually, no. Registration opens Wednesday. Read the fine print. Ooh.
Then we get to Friday. Yeah, Wednesday. Yep.
Yeah, then we get to look and see. That'll be the local qualifier is always your first coverage stop of the long season. Not always in great weather, so we'll hope for that. But any plans to get out and golf? I see Kettle Moraine Golf Club just emailed me. They're going to open Tuesday through Thursday, so after I'm done with the podcast here, Gary, I'm going to start rounding those up again.
Yeah, it's supposed to be in the mid-50s tomorrow, I believe Tuesday, Rob. So there's a chance I'll try to get out and play nine somewhere. I'd like to go early in the morning, but it's still a little too cold. It's still in the mid-30s early in the morning, so you kind of have to wait till the air warms up a little bit. But I'll try to sneak in nine this week at some point, I think.
Yeah, here too. We're only in the upper 40s.
Yeah, well... You get a lot warmer than that, though. So
yeah, we do.
That's where we stay.
Yes, yeah. So we each have our own threshold as to what's cold, but I'm excited, and it's just great because I had a friend mention that he was playing golf, 2 weeks ago. Somebody, one of our friends, was somewhere where there was snow and snowmobiles. I camp anywhere in Wisconsin.
No, it's got to be way up there. Maybe the UP.
Maybe the UP. Yeah. Maybe it's somewhere up in. Mammoth in California, or I know they've got a lot of snow north of us up in Flagstaff, so maybe they're up there. But yeah, people now have to leave Wisconsin to go find snow too. What kind of weather is this?
Oh, I didn't realize you were talking about your neck of the woods with snowmobiles. Yeah, that's got to be pretty far north of you, right?
Well, I don't know where it was. They didn't say where it was, but someone responded because it was we a few people from Arizona in the group, but all of us are originally from Wisconsin. And someone said that can't be in Wisconsin, and we didn't get a definitive answer. But I do know there's snow in parts of Arizona, and of course in the Big Bear Mammoth areas of California. But again, it seems like for golf and for skiing, you've got to leave the state. I mean, you don't have to leave the state really because you've got golf this week, but, it's just, we're on that fine tightrope. And I know that the people of the Northwoods are suffering because there's no, snowmobiling from, supper club to supper club these days.
Yeah, and this, this actually not having a snow cover is really not good for golf in Wisconsin, Rob. You want a snow cover to insulate the greens. You know, some of the higher end courses can, put that tarping and protect their greens through the winter. But, you really want a snow cover to insulate because when there's no snow cover like there is now and you get a little rain and then it freezes and then that's when you get that winter kill and some of the problems with, invasive species and all the problems that superintendents have to deal with, when there's not a snow cover. So, that's going to be a story to follow. I think the spring, Rob, is how courses come out of the winter not having a snow cover and how much damage is done to some of the greens on some of these places.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of the risk of opening too early. As we know that there's a lot of golfers chomping at the bit, but will those same golfers be the ones complaining in June and July that the greens are in typical mid-season shape? So we've got a lot to follow this week. We've got a lot to follow going forward. Gary, appreciate the time, and we'll talk golf again next week.
All right, Rob, thanks.
All right, for Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf. And, again, if you want to get behind what we do here at Wisconsin.Golf, Talking.Golf, a number of advertising, sponsorship, and partnership opportunities with the WSGA, just reach out to Rob Jansen, the executive director of the WSGA, at rob@wsga.org. For Gary, I'm Rob Hernandez. We'll talk golf again next week.